also hold equity stakes in a number of internet startups that have to do with music. So we're working in music a million different ways. And actually, the reason that so many of my artists have appeared at Jeff's conferences, I'm proud to say, is that because very often my artists are the first artists to use new technologies that come around and kind of become the proof of concept. So Andy Grammer was here because he was the first one ever to use the Interlude platform for interactive video. For which he won an MTV award for most innovative video subsequently. And Diane Birch was probably the first music artist ever to use a Twitter party as a launch for an album. A lot of different artists have done a lot of different things. So we always have an excuse to bring our artists out with Jeff. I have an artist in town right now who is not here today in the room. She's getting ready for a show that she's doing tonight, and that's Joss Stone. Don't know if any Joss Stone fans in the audience, but about 10 years ago I produced a 14-year-old Joss Stone on her first album that was called The Soul Sessions, and it was a collection of covers of obscure old soul songs, and it was a real big success, and that started her career.
I found it in the old
kind of word of mouth, you know, before you found people on YouTube. Somebody called me up and just said, we just heard the greatest voice that we've ever heard in our country, and you should make the record. And I flew her from England to New York with her parents, and she sang in my studio and signed on.
Wow.
She didn't even have any demos. We downloaded karaoke tracks from the internet. So that's the internet connection to the signing of Joss Stone. Andy Grammer, we also signed in the most old school way possible. Like, I want to come here and say, I found him on Twitter or something, you know.
Did you?
No. See, that's the thing. You think that that's going to happen in 2012. Andy Grammer, we found performing on the 3rd Street Promenade in Santa Monica. And he was like the best performer on the promenade. He was selling hundreds of CDs every weekend. And he was terrific live. So we signed him. But anyway, 9 years later, we have made a sequel to the Joss Stone Soul Sessions called The Soul Sessions Volume 2. And it's just more covers of obscure soul songs. And I wanted to just play a few seconds of one. This is a total sneak preview. The record's not even out till the end of July, but since I'm here and you're here and she's in town.
You co-produced this.
I produced the record as I did the original one. She's playing tonight at the Highline Ballroom, but it's more than sold out, and we're very excited. But she will be all over TV and stuff this summer. Oh, we're live. This is the internet connection. I figured it out. We're live streaming the concert tonight. If you go to livestream.com/Joss Stone, you can watch the Joss Stone entire concert tonight at 8 o'clock from the Highline Ballroom, and she's amazing live, so I suggest you do it. But for now, let's just have a few seconds of the song. It's called For God's Sake, Give More Power to the People. Music. I recommend the record. Let's talk about other stuff. I don't want to just be pitching my
See, I'm just curious. I'm a Joss Stone fan. You know, I,
me too.
The fact that you actually produced the first album is just ironic, since I was trying so hard to find out who was...
Yeah, I've had a lot of luck with really young artists over the years. I did the first Hanson album. And,
you created Hanson.
You want to hear how parents created
Hanson? You want to hear how Steve created Hanson?
Yes.
Because at the time you were Columbia, right?
You're thinking of the Jonas Brothers.
I'm sorry, that's true. The Jonas Brothers.
I did put the Jonas Brothers together as a band. It originally was Nick Jonas as a solo artist. And I'm the one, when I was president of Columbia Records, I said, you guys should be a band.
And produced the first album. So you did help make Hanson happen.
Yes, I produced the first Hanson album with Umbop and all that. And so I've been very lucky. I've produced three very young artists in my life. Hanson, Joss Stone, and the Jonas Brothers.
And what about you? They've all been good.
They've all been really good. And,
you bark sometimes?
I did bark. I blew up the dogs out. But let's do something. I produced two of the dogs out in 2000 in my friend's living room. And it went on to be a hit, and one of those funny
stories. Yeah, you got two
Grammys for it, and
it's
funny. I've made a lot of records in my life, and the only thing I ever got a Grammy, I got nominated a bunch of times for Grammys. The only thing I ever won a Grammy was for Who Let the Dogs Out.
Wow,
funny thing. Funny legacy. Sorry.
Still a Grammy.
Yes.
Will you hear Bob?
No.
You guys too. Go ahead. We need the audience to just scream, who let the dogs out?
The bomber who did the song in very wimpy barkers.
Ooh.
I was very frustrated in the studio. And,
you just had to show them how to bark?
They said, okay, Mr. Wiseback, you're such a good barker, why don't you bark? And so I did it, and then we kept it on the record, which should have to be a very fortuitous thing that none of us had ever thought of, because the record became so big, and it turns out that if you perform vocally on a record, every time it's on TV, you get a payment. This kind of accidental barking thing was quite generous to me.
But that's great. Any other fortuitous barking you got?
No.
So any of young artists who store other labels that you can sign that have gone on to their careers?
You know, I think that I've mostly signed the artists I've wanted to sign, and I think I mostly stayed away from the right artists. These days, half of what we do is recording artists, and the other half of what we do is we're almost acting as talent scouts for young entrepreneurs with startups. We've gotten involved over the last few years with a lot of web startups that have to do with music, and we try to give them access to our artists so they can try out their ideas, and then we try to give our artists access to these new technologies to give them a little bit of a head start, and it's really worked out for us. The first thing that we got involved with in social media was a company called Nabber, which was thriving back in the dark ages of the ancient history of MySpace.
And this is actually how you actually are no longer the CEO of Columbia Records, correct?
Right. Actually, what happened is how social media lost me my job at Columbia Records. I did the first Jonas Brothers album, and I wanted to market it in a very novel way. MySpace was just starting to happen. The MySpace ecosystem was just starting to happen. All those coding sites where kids, kind of found stuff to get their MySpace pages. That was starting to happen. This is like around 2006. And some guys came to my office and said that, you could take video and put it in a widget, and kids could put it up on their MySpace page, and once it's on their MySpace page, you could keep updating it with new content, which, really, you could do that? I was shocked. I couldn't believe this was possible that you could do this, because nobody was really doing that then. It was the very beginning of MySpace. And I said, let's try that, And so we made this three-part video with the Jonas Brothers for their first single, where each chapter of it ended in a cliffhanger, like a little teen soap opera. And we basically decided to distribute this video by giving it away to all these kids who had these coding sites. Things that you may remember from the MySpace days, sites like Whatever Life and all these kind of places, where kids grab stuff to decorate their MySpace page with. And these kids were really excited because they had never been given any premium content legitimately. They only had a seal of whatever content they were featuring on their sites. And I was like, yeah, take it, put it up. And so these kids all, and all these sites were owned by 15-year-old girls at the time. And they all took this widget and they put it up, and you could get the code and you could put it on your MySpace page. So we did this, and it turned out to be like crazy successful. I think for a couple of reasons. You know, one, the Jonas Brothers were tremendously appealing. It was the first thing they'd done, and it turned out that they really did have great charisma. And secondly, no one had ever done this, so I think all these kids who were going to places like Whatever Life and all the other sites, it's like, wow, I could take this thing and put it on my MySpace page. That's cool. So in the course of the 3 weeks, it was pretty amazing. We had 60 million views of the three videos combined.
60 million?
We put a different video up every week for 3 weeks. So of course, across the three videos, it was 60 million total. And 20,000 kids had pasted the widget on their MySpace page. And more importantly, in a weird way, in the corner of the widget, we had a little thing that said, vote here for TRL. Because back then, MTV still had their countdown show, TRL, which kids voted for. And the record went to number one on TRL without being on the radio or without anything else happening other than this widget. I was blown away. Like, wow, what the power of this thing that we just stumbled upon is incredible. And when the word got out that this had happened in the world of Sony Music, which owned and still owns Columbia Records, they thought the whole thing was a huge fraud. They said, you must have hired a company to place the voting, to do the voting. That is a thing that goes on in the music business. People will vote for these kind of things. There's companies that will do it. I said, no, I didn't hire any company. And they couldn't understand how this widget that they'd never heard of, a widget, and they barely heard of MySpace, and they certainly hadn't heard of coding sites where kids grab stuff to decorate their own. They hadn't heard of any of it. And the idea that that could somehow drive a record to number one on TRL didn't make any sense to them. And it became this very contentious thing between me and them.
What happened?
I left the label about a month later, actually. They dropped the Jonas Brothers because they didn't believe it was real.
Wow.
They thought it was totally fake and it had been staged. And so they dropped the Jonas Brothers. The Jonas Brothers took their record, went to Disney, put it out on Disney, and it became the Jonas Brothers. Wow. So it's one of these, but I knew that it was real, right? I knew that we hadn't hired a company to place the votes. So I actually found the guys who came to us with the widget and said, hey, let's start a company and do this as a business.
How's it work
out? It worked out really well during the MySpace era. It worked out really well. We provided the service for money to music labels, which is really funny, including Columbia Records, actually.
Really?
Yeah. And they used it to spread their acts. Actually, the first act that I signed to Escrow after I left Columbia was a band called We the Kings. And we broke them completely using the Nabo widget on social media pages and in the MySpace ecosystem. And then MySpace, of course, collapsed, and with it, the MySpace ecosystem collapsed. And very luckily, Nabber had a very clever and nimble CEO who pivoted the company, and now it's very, very involved in the social gaming ecosystem, doing something completely different, but is very successful. And we still have an equity stake, and it's so excited, but it doesn't do what it used to do. But it's one of those examples where, like, sometimes you can be too early. You know, you can have an idea that seems so great, and even if it works, no one can get their head around why would that possibly work. In fact, in my whole Columbia Records story, the other part that's really funny is that they were all really mad at me because I had given our content away to these girls who had these sites. You know, how dare you give our content to these people? You know, we sell our content. So, you know, everything about that was just so foreign that they couldn't get it. So what I've learned now, having my own company, is that when guys walk through the door, you know, if they have an interesting idea, I'm all ears. And every once in a while, I like an idea enough that we'll say, okay, I'll be the first label to try it. Because they all come in with the same story. They'll all come in and say, I have this great idea of how to use, you know, social media to do X, you know, with my new product. And I went to Universal and I went to Sony and they won't let me use their artists. And in order for me to prove my concept, I needed to do it with an artist that actually has fans, that actually already has a fan base. And they said no. I always say, well, I'll say yes, let's give it a try. And we try a lot of experiments with a lot of companies, and a lot of them don't really move the needle, and some of them do move the needle. And when it moves the needle, it's very exciting. And when it does move the needle, I'm more than happy to go out and spread the word and get press for the company and open up my Rolodex and get that company to meet with everybody who I know and say, hey, this is a great thing that they just came up with. And which is how Interlude, the interactive video company, got started with the Andy Grammer video. And then we wound up getting a lot of press, including the Wall Street Journal and TechCrunch and Mashable and all kinds of stuff. And shortly thereafter, they got a very big round of funding. So I'd like to think that we played a role in that. And then we continue our involvement on an equity level with that company as well.
So, well, we know that certainly has a direct impact. By the way, Steve is not saying, but certainly if there's anyone in the audience or watching who happens to have social platforms, music,
tweet out to @TVGPro.
and he'll listen to you, because he's looking for that all the time. But we're out of time, but since I'm host, I get to make air time. I do have a question for you, because, you know, the music industry is sort of upside down in real life because of the way that the internet has disrupted music and has changed things, but the way royalties are paid, both for publishing and mechanicals, and, you know, just the whole ecosystem hasn't changed in 50-something years. If you were ahead of Columbia, for that matter, S-curve, I mean, do you have financial incentives today to invest the millions of dollars that were invested in the bands of the 70s, 80s, and albeit 90s? Like, do you think those bands that we grew up with will exist in 5 years? You know, their next generation because of the economics, or?
I worry about the lack of incentive for investment in bands. And, you know, I'll actually give you a quick story that'll illustrate my answer to your question. You know, we started working with this guy, Andy Glamour, who's a singer-songwriter, and we've been working with him now for about 2 years. His album came out a year ago. We took his first single to radio and the video online about a year and a half ago. And it's just, it took all that time for all the pieces to come together. And now he's got, you know, 2 gold singles, and the album's doing well, and he's opening for Train and some on tour and stuff.
Really?
Yep, and it's all happening in a really nice way. And I had lunch with the CEO of one of the major record labels recently, and he said to me, "Congratulations on Andy Grammer. It's an amazing story. Of course, we would never do that." And I said, "Well, what do you mean you'd never do that?" And he said, "Well, in the 18 months that you did Andy Grammer, that took for you to do Andy Grammer, we have launched, you know, 10 artists from TV shows, you know, whether it's The Voice or American Idol or X Factor or whichever shows these particular guys were involved with, or Glee or whatever." And, you know, the point is, they said, "What you did in 18 months is great, but we could actually launch one every week and just keep going." And I said, "Yeah, but the ones that you launch every week don't last. They have their minute, and then they go away. Andy Grammer, I'm hoping, actually has real fans who are loyal and going to stay with him for the course of his career." And this person said to me, "Yeah, but we don't care, right? I mean,
wow.
It doesn't matter.
They don't care.
If I have 10 in a row,
who's this person?
If I have 10 in a row that hit, it doesn't matter if they have a career, because I'll have another one next week. It doesn't matter."
That's
so true. I think what's happened is that the decline in sales in the record business, because of downloading, because of all kinds of things that we all know about, has led to a decline in investment in traditional A&R, artists and repertoire, traditional signing and developing over a long period of artists, and has led to a lot more just sort of quick fix kind of music, where so much music today, so much of the pop pie today is taken up by television, whether it's contestants from game shows, you know, from American Idol or X Factor, whatever the shows are, or people from Glee, or people from the Disney Channel, or people from Nickelodeon, or people who have their songs in TV commercials, right? The group Fun, who have maybe the biggest hit of the year, The Grey Young, which is a great record, right? That the difference for that record was having a big TV ad on the Super Bowl. So the question is, like, once all the slots get taken up by things that have a TV audience, how much room is there for the guy who just is out there plowing through every night on the road trying to build a fan base? And that percentage of the audience, of the opportunity, keeps shrinking and shrinking. And that's really what I'm worried about, is who's going to have the incentive to really invest in people over the long haul when you can just kind of do, I'll tell you what's really funny to me is that I never would have imagined that in 2012, if you asked me 10 years ago, you said, "Well, what's going to be the single biggest influence on pop music in 2012? I never would have guessed television. Right? We all would have thought the internet, but in fact, it's television that breaks new artists in the pop arena, which is a very funny turn of events.
Do you think that's going to continue?
Well, television is one of the last places where there's a truly mass audience, and where you can aggregate that audience instantly, boom, and you know, you can have a song on Glee now, and in 5 minutes, people will all run to iTunes and buy it.
So what happens on the day that American Idol decides to give up being on Fox and goes internet only? Does that change the internet dynamic?
No, I think that probably this whole TV as the big aggregator period is a transitional period. I have to imagine that eventually TV will fragment more and more to the point where the numbers aren't really there anymore, like they are now. But right now, TV is one of the last places where there's numbers. And what's funny is that the reason that the TV tie-in is so powerful is because of radio, which is the other thing that you might not expect it to still be so dominant, but it is. And what's interesting about radio is that radio's research methodology has gotten so much more sophisticated in just the last couple of years, where they used to have those diaries where you fill out what station you're listening to, and it was very inexact. And now you know, they have these radios where the people who are the sample audience, you know, they know exactly when they turn the station and turn off the radio. So that means that the radio station really knows which songs people turn off when they hear them. And of course, not surprisingly, the songs that people turn off most readily are ones that are unfamiliar, right? Those get the highest amount of tune out. So more and more, a song has to prove itself in some other arena before it can even get on the radio. And what's the easiest arena to prove yourself in and get some familiarity before you get go to radio? It's television.
Yeah.
So there's this combination between these big TV shows and radio really shining away from anything that's unfamiliar that combines to really make it very, very difficult for anyone without some sort of marketing tie-in to actually get through the door. So the Andy Grammer thing, which we're really, really proud of, because he had nothing other than a lot of talent, a hit song, and a label that was committed to him, and that's really rare to see.
Wow, Steve, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate
it. Oh, yeah, he had an interactive video, too.
He did have a video, by the way.
And by the way, this year, MTV O Music Awards, which are happening very, very soon. We actually are very lucky we have two nominees.
Really?
For the most innovative video. One is We the Kings' new video, which is also an interactive video. That's on our label. And then Interlude, the interactive video company, has a second video that's also nominated. I forget which one it is. But
really?
They have two of the five nominees for most innovative video are Interlude interactive video. So we're really proud of that.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks so much for being here.